Welcome to the Gallery of Readers podcast. Today we will be hearing from Susan Kakalis, a self-described recovering academic from teaching for nearly 40 years in the UMass German Studies department. Some of the pieces she'll be reading were influenced by her lectures on witches and Grimm's to Disney. She has such a way with words, and her work is definitely intended for a mature audience. I'm Larkin, and Gallery of Readers is a nonprofit small press that organizes a reading series every year and has published 21 books by local authors. For those books, free poems, event information, and more, visit us at galleryofreaders.org. Susan, what's happening in your writing life right now?
Well, right now, I'm working on a new piece. I go to crossword puzzle tournaments, and there's an American crossword puzzle tournament held every year in April, and they are my target audience for the puns and the things I write. So two of the pieces were written for them, and I'm working on this year's right now.
That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah. You know, there's 700 people in a room, and or over 700 this year, and you all get the puzzle at the same time, and then you have to write.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just neural nerds.
They're all nerds. Oh, I love that feeling when you find your people.
That's my tribe.
Yes. When did you start writing?
I've always rhymed since I was a kid, and I always wrote things for people's birthdays or, you know, occasional poetry, but it was always meant to be comic and rhyming and doggerel. I'm a dog person, so doggerel made more sense to me than catterel. And then after I retired, I joined Carol's writing group, Carol Edelstein's writing group, and was writing more systematically then.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. What authors would you say inspire you?
Oh, Ogden Nash.
Oh, my goodness.
It has to be Ogden Nash.
Yes. Wow.
And then for the prose things, with the puns, I like things like puns where they say two different things at the same time, and there are lots of layers that people can go into.
That was something I really noticed reading your pieces, was that I just felt my brain working, and I wanted to give it more and more read-throughs. It was really delightful. What reaction would you say you hope to elicit from an audience?
Laughter.
Okay.
Laughter. Yeah, I hope they laugh, and that's why Zoom was such a horrible time, because everyone was muted, so you couldn't tell if anyone was laughing, and you didn't know whether the piece was landing or not, and it was just, I'm glad it's over.
Yeah. I feel trepidatious about how this will feel to you today, but just imagine all the people in the future laughing.
I hope so.
What are your favorite venues for reading?
Oh, my favorite is the American Crossword Puzzle Tournament.
Of course.
But I love what Carol and Robin are doing here in the Valley, and I've had readings fairly often in their series, and I love the people that come to them. The people in the writing groups tend to appreciate them, and the Happier Valley Comedy had some open Friday nights that Kelsey was let you sign up for, and you could go and try out stand-up or stories with that, and also the Story Slam audiences for NEPM.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how does that work with the crossword gathering? Do you guys do a talent show?
Yeah, we do six puzzles on Saturday, and then on Sunday they have a Sunday length puzzle for us to do, so we have to come in at 9 o'clock, and they give us 45 minutes to do the puzzle, but everyone finishes before, most people finish before then. And then they have to correct all those puzzles to see who's the winner in each group and who's the winner of the whole thing. So they have to have about an hour or so that's between the finishing and giving away the prizes, and that's the talent show.
Amazing.
And so I've been doing that for a few years now.
That sounds like a really great time. Why rhyming and puns?
I don't know. They I've always rhymed. And I don't think I can write serious poetry. I've tried. And nothing. I tried writing sonnets, you know, things with rhymes in them. But I can only do doggerel, and I have to have meter and rhyme and puns if they fit.
Amazing.
So that's what I do.
It's like finding your people, but with your style of poetry.
Yeah.
Wow. Where does writing come from for you?
I'll be like for the lessons out of school, often I'd be walking my dog. I had boxers for a long time. And a name would come up, and then I think of a rhyme to it. And I'd like using the nursery rhyme, like Old Mother Hubbard went to the cupboard, and then a longer line to get her poor dog a bone. And then, you know, two shorter lines and a longer line. And I think of a rhyme, and that starts it, and then it just goes from there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing and for being here.
Yeah. This is an example. Queen Cleopatra, okay? So what rhymes with Cleopatra? Queen Cleopatra bid Frank Sinatra to come to her chambers one night. The Queen of the Nile was charmed by his smile, and old Blue Eyes found love at first sight. They shared desert sands, a deep need for fans, and both of them entertained Caesar. One sang in his palace, one toyed with his phallus. My way did it her way, just to please her. In addition to fashion, both expressed passion for husbands and lovers and wives. He was tempestuous, she, twice incestuous. Neither claimed to lead virtuous lives. They shared orgies and drugs, brawny bodyguard thugs, and a contempt for the old straight and narrow. He was a showman, alas, Italian, not Roman. And both of them married a pharaoh. This one is The Wizard of Oz. Now, The Wizard of Oz had a fetish for bras, which he kept from the Emerald City. He found very sexy a lacy playtexy when graced with a supple young titty. He guessed Glinda might be at least a cup D, or maybe he'd make that D double. Her décolleté always brightened his day whenever she rode in her bubble. The witch of the East, who was now deceased, must be flat as a pancake, he thought. He hated her clothes, to wit the striped hose, although those ruby slippers were hot. But he really detested the very flat-chested and green Wicked Witch of the West. She would barely protrude if seen in the nude, but who'd want to see her undressed? And then Dorothy G, who'd not even be, if she were breasted at all. With that mangy matoto in her stretches, you grow, how could she have been his downfall? On that fateful day, he stared in dismay when that cursed curtain went up. Because there on display was his lingerie, and he was wearing a padded C cup. This is a more sentimental piece. It's called The Button, and it's about romance. The Button. Once an ancient four-hole button fell hard for a sexy zipper. For punishment, he was a glutton, for the lady was a stripper. Yes, she had her ups and downs, emerging from a sleazy past to her current stage renown as Zsa Zsa the Ecdysiast. Our hero, he was one of many, buttons lined up in a row, so he felt new freedom when he fell off during her late show. Some lesser zipper strippers opened before Miss Zsa Zsa took the stage. While he watched, he dared to hope and dreamt that they might get engaged. Oh, alas, our button's hopes were dashed by the theater's cleanup crew, who later swept him in the trash. And so Miss Zsa Zsa never knew.
Oh.
It's sad.
Yeah.
Now this trigger warning, this is Barbicide. Oh, Barbie, Barbie, come and play. I think I'll chew your feet today. That is the foot that's still attached. I'll put on clothes that are mismatched and that belong to little Skipper. Because I can't even close the zipper and your boobs are almost bare. But then I'll wash and cut your hair and put on makeup with my marker. At last, to tan you darker, I'll leave you outside in the sun. I really think that will be fun to stick you face down in the dirt. I promise you this will not hurt as I press your shaven head down, 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 down until you're dead. I'll take your head off, then your clothes, and leave you for the G.I. Joes. They will bring you back inside with your hands and foot all tied and stick you in the microwave. It's too late. Ken cannot save you now. He drives up in his vet just as the oven timer's set, and you, this fatal hand are dealt, your plastic body starts to melt until you're just a molten pool, and I put you in the sink to cool and stick your head into the plastic. Now, maybe this sounds drastic. My mom gets all upset with me, but it's what I think that she deserves. You know, my Barbie, not my mother. She just goes and buys another. I'll take care of that one, too. I mean, what else is a girl to do? For your historical knowledge, Elizabeth Tudor. Elizabeth Tudor had a red motor scooter to drive around Buckingham Palace. The guards all saluted as past them she scooted, though forbidden by Lex Generalis. She'd often cancel her talks with her chancellor to take a quick scoot round the gardens. They'd call, "Majesty," but softly, lest she crash before she signed pardons. Lord Essex and Leicester did not wish to vex her, but all of the peers were incensed. She never cares about world affairs. She must tend to some pressing events. And she should marry King Tom, Dick, or Harry, and bear them an heir to the throne. A virgin queen's fine if there's a next in line, but oh no, she rules England alone. All this she knew, yet she did not rue the hours she spent on her Vespa. How she did like that red motorbike. La vie en rose, thought Elizabeth, n'est-ce pas? This is Marie Antoinette, a French Revolution fame. Marie Antoinette never went to the vet, and he never came to Versailles. He let it be known that her pets had all grown obese, as he raised an outcry. Her standard French poodle ate only strudel, her Siamese loved soccer tort. Her dachshund long hair had a taste for éclair, and that's how pets were fed at her court. Her prize papillon had a penchant for scones, and her cockatiel sipped on milkshakes. Her orangutan only dined on meringue. Her motto was, let them eat cakes. These poor, abused pets fed on crèmes and galettes were a sight she could no longer bear. It was with grim spite that he took delight in her arrest by the priest Robespierre. she'd finally pay for the indecent ways she had treated both peasants and pets. On her very last day, she got one creme brulee after a last meal of, yes, crepe Suzette's. This is a dirty one, okay, but it's very clever.
I'm sure.
I bet you never knew this about Johann Sebastian Bach. Johann Sebastian Bach had a well-tempered cock, which he christened his Magnificat. His organ would swell in the Meister's Kapelle. Over 21 kids he begot. Since his passions waxed strong, Bach could fugue all day long. How he loved contrapuntis in versus. Cantata 169, quote, O Jesu, du Schwein, became known as his opus perversus. The Brandenburg Concerti, shockingly dirty. The great ass in B minor was smut. His Goldberg variations on odd copulations were said to have favored the butt. Leipzig rose up in arms. Burgers called the gendarmes. The censors demanded that he make revisions. He said, ipse dixit. It's Baroque. I can't fix it. The cantor won't, sneered his foes in derision. These last two things need some introduction. These are the things I wrote for the crossword puzzle tournament, and I'm using a vocabulary of names derived from another field entirely, or a certain field, to tell a story that's linear, but it makes no sense if you see it written on the page. And one of these is about novelists, and it's a story with the names of novelists, you know, put in. And they, your trick is to try and understand the story as it goes along.
Thank you.
Okay. Novelist. When Joyce was 9 years old, both her parents found early graves. Her mother, Carol, was a Barth fly who was murdocked by her father, Lewis, a cocaine addict. He stowed the corpse in their wells, then got into his automatic Ford. But the sad thing was, he was so rushed he crashed into the Wodehouse and broke his neck. Later that year, she was adopted by two gay men named James and Lawrence, who lived in the village of Golden Green, with its rowling hills, grass fielding swift brooks, and copses of dogwoods, atwoods, and isherwoods. They gave her a cozy room and introduced her to a healthy diet of muesli, bowls of hearty broth, gray brode, roasted fowls, and fruit capote. At first, she took her lessons seriously and even became an overachiever. And when they all caught the twain to London, Joyce was fascinated by the Brontosaurus and the Stegosaurus at the museum. They hoped she might become a doctor of paleontology. But in her teens, something was clearly amiss. They got her drinking, smoking potok, and Tolkien for hours on the phone with her Updike Nesbo friend, Christy, a girl of Lowe's morals. But it wasn't until their trip to France and Germany, where her foster parents witnessed her wild, if not feral, side. In Paris, although they'd always taught her to buy at thrift stores and not to spend all her allowance in one place, she wanted them to shelly out $100 for burgess of a miniskirt that barely reached below her popo. Well, then they caught her making ostentatious wolf whistles and lewd hissing noises at the Rabelais. Finally, back at their hotel, after a Verne assage and a dinner of Flaubergine Gratin, they caught her in her robe grillée, fondling some Beerbohm's Balzac and Hesse's Cocteau. James lost it. God damn it, he exclaimed sternly as he threw the Baum out. Will Hugo with me to give her the Dickens? This has to stop. Come hell or high water. Or we'll have to send her to Catholic boarding school. Did he understand? Relax, Lawrence remarked. She's just sowing her wild oats. You're as bad as she is, James huffed, and left in his friend Anatole's Toyota. But alas, later events proved Lawrence wrong. Joyce was man crazy. Otherwise, she wouldn't have run off to become a prostitute in Paris. Obviously, she had left the path of righteousness forever. But called well that ends well, for even as a streetwalker, she was no common trollop.
So amazing how you read that without flinching.
That's the part of it. Yeah.
Wow.
That's the performance part.
So impressive.
Yeah. The last one is it's for this past year's ACPT, and it's Snow White through the lens of art history. Once, long ago, Snow Wyatt's Moma died, and her Dada, the king, brought home her new stepmother well. But then he perished in a foreign war hole. The new queen was so vain that she had many beauticians to apply her mask Caravaggio and give her manicures and Botox injections. She watched her callow wreaths, but still had a Frau Lippi suction. Each day she asked, Miro, Miro, on the Wald, who's your favorite one of all? Each day the magic Miro said, she was, until it said, Snow Wyatt. The queen turned green with envy, and she grew so fair climped that she was always pissarrowed off. She called her constable sergeant and said through my gritted teeth, I've had knopf. Let's have done with this once for all. Take Snow Wyatt to the Rivera, hold her head hundertwasser, and oh, keep it there until she is no Morris. The constable sergeant, however, lets Snow Wyatt go in the forest, where frolicking raccoons and hoppering runny babbits led her to a tiny log cabin. The door was stuck, but once she jotted the door open, she exclaimed, Yoko, oh no, little boys live here. That's why it's so messy. Yuck. And it was. There was bacon grease under Gus's stove and our crumbs and herring bones all over. She and the woodland schwitters started to Cellini up singing, Whistler, why you work? Whistler, why you work? That evening, the Edvard Munchkins came home from work. They worked in the Minnes to Ernst Monet. Today they were on Fuseli, tired and sore, since no train or bus was running, and they couldn't make their van go. The little Menzel introduced themselves as Gropi, Scheele, Rainey, Gaudi, Da Vinci, Getty, and Doofy. Sadly, Snow White couldn't remember their names or tell them op art, but she said, dinner's ready. So they ate El Greco salad with fetting, a hearty fish au Barothco, and a Basquiat of French fresh bread. For dessert there was, oh, for dessert there was I am pie with ash berries. Then they all sat around the Munchkins, drinking Michelangelo and Dufia Coca-Colbits, while Snow had just Uffizi water. Gaudi played Noldies but Goodies on the cassette recorder, and then Snow White sang, I'm waiting, waiting for the one I louvre, da-da-da, today. Later, when she left to use the Johns in the Bauhaus, naive Duffy asked if she might shag all of them with their tiny dicks. Oops. Better stop there.
there's so much. Everybody, Susan's book, Lessons Out of School, is available on the Gallery of Readers website, so come visit online. We are a nonprofit and exist through this community. We would love to see you at a reading or hear about a book you've especially loved recently. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back soon with another local author. Until then.